Welcome to the Kate Languages podcast. I'm your host, Kate Clifton. I'm a former MFL teacher who left the classroom in 2017 to set off on my own adventure. Since then, I've developed my passion for helping teachers through creating time-saving teaching resources, delivering language lessons and CPD to languages teachers, and of course, through this podcast. I've had some wonderful feedback from teachers about how my work is helping them with their everyday teaching, and I love connecting with teachers from all over the world. To get in touch, you can find me on Instagram and Facebook. I'm at Kate Languages on both. Or you can email me through my website, katelanguages.co.uk. But for now, grab a cuppa, although maybe not if you're listening in the car. Sit back, relax, and enjoy another episode of the Kate Languages podcast. Hi, how are you? Welcome back to another episode of the Kate Languages podcast, and this is Season 9, episode 1, which is a Q&A episode, because I always kick off every season with a Q&A episode. But yeah, I can't believe it's season 9. Do you know, I actually started this podcast nearly 4 years ago, but it took a little while to kind of get going and get consistent with it, and for it to sound a bit more professional. Those of you who have listened to any of season 1 will realize it does sound very, very different these days. But yeah, can't believe I'm still going. But I've had so much really lovely feedback recently from people about the podcast. I think people, so I'm recording this in January. I'm literally recording this a few days before it's actually going to be released, which almost never happens. I usually record them way in advance. But yeah, over the Christmas holidays, I feel like people had a chance to have a little listen of some episodes and sort of catch up a little bit. So I've had some really nice messages and feedback. If anybody would like to translate that into an actual review, that would be really lovely, especially on Apple Podcasts. It just helps get the podcast out there a little bit. You know, if people are leaving reviews, it just helps to just get the podcast out there a little bit. So that is always very much appreciated. So as I say, it is January 2025. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is my word of the year for 2025. Every year I choose a word of the year, so I'm going to tell you all about that in a moment. And then I have had so many great questions for the Q&A part of this episode. I'm going to stick to about 5 or 6 questions. I've got maybe like 2 or 3 really, really quick questions, and then another 4 more in-depth questions. And as I say, I've got some fantastic ones. I've actually set up a Google form for people to submit questions. So I've got them all in front of me and I know where they all are, because for previous episodes, I've had like some on Facebook and then some on Instagram and then all over the place. So I've got a Google form. I've got all the questions in the Google form. And what that means as well is, only that I don't answer in this episode, I can answer them in season 10. Quick bit of news about the podcast. Have you noticed there is some new artwork for the podcast? I would love to know what you think. I think it looks a lot more professional. I still made it myself on Canva. One day I might get to the point where I'm professional enough to actually, you know, pay a graphic designer to do these things. But yeah, I did make it myself on Canva, but I think it looks a little bit better. It's also more representative of me because the old picture was quite old. So it's a more recent pictures. I had some professional brand photos taken back in about October time, 2024. And I absolutely love them, and I've been using them loads. So if you've seen some really nice looking, as in like professional looking, not that I look particularly amazing, but really lovely professional looking photos on my social media recently and my new profile picture on Facebook and Instagram, I have had some proper professional photos done with a very lovely Amanda, whose daughter is actually in the same class as my son at school. But even if they weren't, if I had found out about her another way, I definitely would have picked her anyway, because she's a fantastic photographer. So just give a little shout out there to Amanda. Anyway, so I'm going to talk about my word of the year, and then I've got a few questions to answer. So let's dive in. So yeah, first of all, my word of the year for 25. So before I tell you my 2025 word of the year, I just want to have a quick reflection on 2024. My word of the year for 2024 was the word strength. Now, when I say I choose a word of the year, I honestly feel like the words choose me. And I've been looking right back actually. And in 2023, my word of the year was health, because at the end of 2022, I was in hospital. Listened to one of my old Q&A episodes for like really long detailed. I really didn't mean to make it longer detailed. But yes, quite a long detailed story of my gallstones and my gallbladder and how I ended up in hospital around Christmas 2022. So in 2023, I was very much focusing on my health and I had my gallbladder removed and very simply, I didn't work for a few months and yeah, various, you know, different challenges health-wise. And then my word for 2024, I wanted to kind of build on that. So I was a lot healthier, but I wanted to feel stronger. And what I love about picking a word of the year rather than like old-fashioned kind of New Year's resolutions, although saying that I do always do September resolutions as well, but having a word of the year, for me, it shapes so many of my decisions and so much of my behaviour throughout the whole year. And I do reflect on it and I do come back to it regularly. And it's always kind of there in the back of my mind. So during 2024, I definitely felt that this word strength showed up for me in a number of different ways. In terms of my business, I really feel that my business is in a really strong position now. It's stronger than it's ever been. And I'm not just, you know, not just financially, although I've basically tripled my income in the past couple of years, so that feels, you know, pretty strong, and I'm really, really proud of that. But yeah, it, for me, having a strong business is a business that works around my life. My work is a huge part of my life. I love my work. Everybody who knows me knows this. However, I do also have a family, and I also, you know, I want to have a life. So having a business that works around my family. So I do not work in school holidays anymore. I might check my emails now and then. Last summer, for some reason, I decided to do a couple of workshops, which were actually really good workshops, I've got to say, my speaking exam workshops. And I think they were really useful for people at the time, and they were only just quick half-hour workshops. But I that really, really brought it home to me that I don't want to be working during school holidays. So that's what I mean by my business feels strong, in that I can work out how I'm going to work just in term time. It's not like when you're a teacher, you don't get paid during the school holidays when you're not working. Although because so much of my business is passive, as and if you don't know about passive income, I've done a whole episode on passive income. So because a lot of my business is my resources and things like that are just on my website and people can buy them and download them, and that is passive income for me. I do still earn money when I'm not working, but it's never as much. So, you know, over the Christmas holidays, I maybe earn £1,000, whereas that's kind of not very much for me to earn over a kind of 3-week period normally. So, yeah, so that's what I mean by having a strong business. Physically, I try to work on my strength as well. I mean, I'm not, you know, some kind of bodybuilder at all, but I try to start doing exercise that made me feel stronger. So going for regular walks and incorporating a walk into my daily routine has been absolutely amazing. And I kind of feel weird if I don't go for a walk, you know, at least 2 or 3 times a week. And if I'm not, so I tend to drop my son off and then I'll go for a walk kind of on the way home. It's a long drive to where he's at school. But yeah, there's a lovely place that I love going for a walk, and I just, you know, I stop on the way home and I go for a quick walk. Today, for example, was 15 minutes. Sometimes it's maybe 20 minutes, sometimes it's only 10 minutes. And that makes me feel stronger. And then I bought some dumbbells and I've been doing a little bit of, you know, weight training, but again, just a quick 10 minute workout. So that's physical. I think one of the hardest things, and something I did really focus on last year, was my mental and emotional strength. And this is something it's quite difficult to talk about. And I think it will resonate with quite a lot of people. So bear with me, because, yeah, it's hard. I very much am aware of being in, I think we get called the sandwich generation. I think being an older parent, so I was 39 when I had my son, being an older parent, I think really exacerbates that. And I've got quite a few friends who are my age who've got young kids as well. It's becoming more normal, I think. So a lot of us have got parents who are in their 70s and even into their 80s. And I'm not saying it's not difficult for people who have older kids. And I'm sure having teenagers and having elderly parents is just a whole other kind of challenge in and of itself. But I think there is something particularly challenging about having a very young child or very young children and aging parents. And a couple of our parents, between myself and my husband, have long-term illnesses. And yeah, and it's just really hard. And just sort of seeing what my friends' parents are going through. And the problem is it's only going to get harder. And for me, one of the reasons I wanted to focus on my own strengths, and I guess it could be called resilience as well, last year, was that I can see what's going to be happening over the next, I mean, hopefully, 10, 15 years, but we don't know. Like I say, it's hard to talk about, and it's something that I don't want to be too morbid about, but I also want to be realistic. And I think I need to build a kind of internal inner strength as a way of figuring out, how do we navigate all this over the coming years? So, yeah, so like I say, it was such an important word for me for the year, and it really resonated so many times. And there were lots of times I was like, I need to draw on various different forms of strength over the course of the year to just get by. And I've not even mentioned the perimenopause, but my word, that involves quite a lot of strength as well. So there were times, though, I've been on HRT now for over a year. It's not something I really want to talk about a huge amount. I don't want to be some kind of like menopause specialist or anything like that. It's just one of these things that all women are going to go through at some point. Again, I've probably gone through it maybe a bit younger than normal, so I've got that on top of everything else. And there have been days in the past year or so where I literally have felt like I'm wading through treacle. That's how I've described it. And again, you just have to build on, like, draw on all your reserves of strength, because it is extremely hard work. And some people don't struggle as much as I have. I think I've got to a point where I'm all right with the old HRT at the moment, but I'm sure it will change again over the coming months and years. And it's just, something to add to the list of things that you need to work on. But that's the reason why my physical strength and being a bit fitter is absolutely essential. Okay, so there you go. A bit of a reflection for 2024. Probably too much information with certain things, but people say that they like to hear about my life. and they like that aspect of the podcast. So let me know if you don't want to hear any of those kind of things anymore. But anyway, on to 2025. My word for this year, so if you follow me on social media, you might have spotted this already. I did do a post about it around New Year. My word for this year is peace. Again, this word chose me. It popped into my head at some point in December 2024. And I was thinking, oh, what word could I have for my word of the year 2025? And it came into my head and I kept thinking, no, I'll try and think of some other ones. What other words could I? And there was just nothing. There were no other words at all that popped into my head. It was literally the word peace was there in my head. And it just felt right. It just felt like the right word for me, moving from the health, the strength, and now peace. So as I was saying, in terms of my business, my business feels very, very strong at the moment. And it's brought me to a place where I do feel more peace with my work. I feel like I've spent a couple of years since I got better again after my gallbladder incidents. I've spent a couple of years kind of really pushing my social media, pushing my marketing. I set up a new website last year. I've changed so many things, and I feel like I've I don't know if hustling is the right word, but I, you know, I've definitely pushed and pushed and pushed, and I've learned so much about marketing and business and things like that. Which, on a side note, if you are interested in, because I do love all this stuff, I have started sharing some stuff on my Instagram. I've set up a close friends list. And if you want a bit of business and marketing content and tips and things like that, send me a message on Instagram and I will add you to my close friends list, and then you'll be able to see these posts. I don't share them with everybody because I know that they're not relevant for a lot of people in my audience. So yeah, just that on a bit of a side note. So yeah, I have learned so much. I've done some amazing courses. I've joined some amazing memberships. But I feel like I'm getting to a point where I know a lot of stuff. Sometimes it feels like it frazzles my brain a little bit, and I just want that sort of calm and peace. So yeah, that's where the point I'm at in my business. I've also made a decision about like the timings of my work as well. So when my son started school in September, I think it's taken a few months to get used to that new routine. So he was at preschool for 3 days a week, and then starting 5 days a week in September was a big shock to the system. And like I say, it's quite a long drive as well. So I'm in the car often for a couple of hours every day. So it's about 25 to 30 minutes there, drop him off, then back, and then I go and pick him up again in the afternoon. So, you know, it's a lot of driving and it's a long way. And I was getting really stressed out about coming home and just going, I just need to get on with some work. I really need to get on with some work because I've only got a couple of hours, you know, 5 hours or whatever. And then I've got to leave. I tend to log off about 2:30 to go and pick him up at 3:15-ish. So yeah, so I've actually realised, I've only done this for a couple of days this term, and I already feel so much calmer, is I'm not going to start working until 10 o'clock. So that means that I come home and I can have a walk. And if I want to have a half hour walk, that gives me time to have a half hour walk. If I just want a 10 minute walk, then I've got time to have a 10 minute walk. And then I come home and I've got time to do things like put a load of washing on, or I don't know, prep some food for lunchtime, or for, you know, for dinner even, shove some stuff in the slow cooker. I don't know. Yesterday I came home and changed our bed covers because we hadn't got around to doing it at the weekend, and I just really wanted fresh, clean bed covers. And just not putting that pressure on myself to be like, I've got to be home and starting work at 9:15 or 9:30 or whatever. So actually waiting and having a bit of a calmer time when I get home is already, I know it's only been a couple of days, but it's already making me feel less stressed. So fingers crossed that that will help me to feel more at peace. And I'm not going to work on Friday. So again, you know, when my son was at preschool 3 days a week, I worked those 3 days and had lovely time with him on my days off. I almost felt a bit guilty when he started school, thinking, oh, well, he's at school 5 days, I should be working 5 days. I tried to sort of try and take time off. I have had quite a few Fridays off, like I had a wonderful Friday in London with my mum. We went to the Tate Modern. I had a lovely day out in October on one Friday. My husband works, he actually works 90%, so he gets every other Friday off. And we've had some very nice breakfast dates where we've popped into Stamford and had a lovely breakfast and things like that. So, you know, I haven't been really working on Fridays, but there have been Fridays where I'm like, oh, I really need to get on some work, I really need to do some stuff. And I'm actually saying to myself now, I am not going to work on Fridays. I'm going to work from 10 a.m. until about 2:30, maybe a bit longer if other people are picking my son up from school, or if he's going to stay a bit later one day a week. And then I'm really taking Fridays off. So, yeah. And that will give me peace. I feel like that will bring peace in my life. Another way that I am hoping that peace will show up for me this year is, and I don't know if this will resonate with quite a lot of people, especially the women and especially the mums. And I'm sorry if this is a really, like, that's a really sexist thing to say. But when I make a decision, I need to be at peace with my decision. I have a tendency to make a decision and then churn it over for absolutely ages and then feel like I need to justify it over and over again to lots of people. So a really good example of this is we made the decision to send our son to a private school, an independent, fee-paying private school. I am actually very at peace with this decision. It's different in terms of, like, I didn't go to a private school. lots of people in my family did, and my husband did. So, you know, it's not completely out of the ordinary for our family, but I didn't go to a private school. And I've always been quite left wing, quite liberal. But we just happened to have found a school that is an incredible school. And he loves it. And he was there for nursery and preschool. He's got lots of lovely little friends. I've made loads of mum friends who I really like. And we just felt like it was the best decision. And I'm doing it again, aren't I? We've made the decision. I don't need to justify it. I don't need to explain it. But this is what I find myself doing, because I know that people disapprove. And I know that people, you know, don't always agree with private schools, and everybody is totally entitled to their own opinions about these things. But yeah, so when I make a decision, and a particularly a huge life decision like that, the way that I want the word peace to show up for me this year is that I've made that decision and I'm at peace with that decision. Another way in which I want the word peace to show up for me, and it kind of relates to these decisions as well, is thinking about the type of work that I'm doing that brings me peace. And this does relate to a huge decision I made towards the end of 2024. And that's about the work that I'm doing. And that's that we are not going to be doing tuition anymore with Kate Languages, which is a bit funny, because when I set up my business, the website has always been Kate Languages, but the actual official name of my business is Kate Jones Language Tuition. And basically the only thing that remains out of that is Kate. Oh, and language, I suppose. There's still the language there, isn't there? But my surname's changed. And yeah, as of now, we're not taking on any new students. So I've got about four tutors who've been working with me who are absolutely wonderful. And it was a difficult decision to make because of them. And I really enjoy having that contact with them. And they've been absolutely wonderful. But what we're finding, and I say we, being myself and Elena, who's my VA, my virtual assistant, what we're finding is that it's a huge amount of work for very little return and very little profit. If I'm going to be, you know, on a business level, there is very little profit. If I'm paying a tutor, plus I'm paying Elena to do all the admin, there's just no profit in it for me. And it's just not worth our while. And it's a shame, because it's definitely something that's needed. So for years, I've only taught teachers. I've only taught MFL teachers. And it is something that is really, really needed. And I know that people want the lessons. We've not really, I don't know if anybody has noticed this, we've not really talked about it. Like, I've not promoted that this is something that we do for basically this whole academic year. But it's a decision that I took a few months ago, and I told my tutors, don't worry, this is not my way of telling my tutors, they all know. And yeah, it's like I say, it's been a really difficult decision. In terms of income, it might mean a drop in income overall, but as I say, probably not a drop in profit. It means that I can dedicate more time to resources and CPD and things like that, which I know people desperately need at the moment for the new GCSE. And with the recruitment crisis, so many more people are asking me for full lessons and things like that. And I want to be able to dedicate more time to creating those things rather than all this back and forth and admin with the tutors and with potential tutees and, you know, teachers and finance departments, my favourite people in the world. So, yeah, but again, that's a decision that I've made that I think will bring peace to my business. But also it's a decision that I'm still working on being at peace with, because you always get a bit of guilt and stuff, don't you? So, but yeah, so hopefully that's a decision that people will understand and yeah, will bring peace to everybody. Peace and love and harmony and whatever. And then in terms of my own world, my own life outside of the business, as I mentioned, with the strength having, you know, older parents and just being at peace with the knowledge that people get older and people get ill, and that is very difficult, but to just enjoy every, you know, the time that we have, and to, yeah, to gain a sense of peace about that. That's going to be a harder one, I think, because I do like things to be different than they are. I find it quite hard sometimes to accept if something is as it is. And yeah, I do find that quite hard sometimes. So that's one that I'm going to be working on this year. And doing exercise, it brings me peace. So perhaps going for longer walks. So as I was saying, I'm not working on Fridays. One of my plans for Fridays is to try to go for much longer walks. So, you know, a couple of hours, a few miles, rather than these quick 15-minute walks that I do on the way home from school, because I gain so much just calmness, clarity. I love being outside and doing that type of exercise, trying to do a bit more meditation, yoga, maybe that kind of thing. I don't know. I don't know exactly how it's going to show up for me. It might show up for me going swimming again more regularly, which I haven't done for ages, which I've always absolutely loved. But I don't know. Anyway, do you have a word of the year? Do my words resonate with you at all? Do you want to... yeah, choose your own word of the year and let me know. So get in touch on the socials. As always, I'm at Kate Languages on Instagram and Facebook, or to send an email to hello@katelanguages.co.uk and let us know what your word of the year is. Right. I didn't mean for this to last for nearly half an hour before I've even started on the Q&A. So hopefully I'm going to be a bit quicker on the Q&A. Hopefully you haven't just like fast forwarded through all of my ramblings about my word of the year. And so on to the Q&A. Firstly, a couple of really, really quick questions. Number one, have you ever done an episode talking to people who have successfully left the classroom? Yes, I have. I did a brilliant episode. It was a live one. So we got some great questions as we were going along and comments and stuff, which was really, really good fun, with Bex Waker. So Rebecca Waker, who is the MFL subject advisor for EdXL now. That was season 6, episode 6. That was a fantastic episode. So yes, I've done one of those. There was another question about school trips. What's the easiest and most efficient way to plan a trip? I did a brilliant episode with Claire Wilson about planning a school trip. That was season 7, episode 6, another live one. So again, lots of comments and lots of input from the people who were on our Zoom call with us when we were doing that. So that's a couple of really, really quick questions. Another question, what language do you speak to your son and can he speak it back? I feel like I answered this a couple of years ago in a Q&A. I mean, we just speak English in our house, I've got to say. My husband can speak French and Spanish, and my son, the very spoilt, very lucky little boy that he is, has been abroad. Oh, my God. I was talking to my sister about this literally yesterday. He's been to Spain. I don't know if I should admit this. He's been to Spain 5 times. And he's been to France twice. And he's been to Germany once and America twice. And he wasn't even allowed to travel until he... like, we didn't even go anywhere till he was 18 months old because of COVID. So, yes, what a lucky little boy. So, my point is here, though, as you can hear from that, we do go to the countries of the languages that I speak and that my husband speaks. And he sees that we are speaking those languages and he sees that it's like a thing that people do. He has French lessons at school, which is so cute, and he loves them. I think, again, he knows that we love that he's learning French, but he loves his French lessons. So, yeah. So we speak English at home, but he is doing a little bit of French at school, and he's had that exposure when we go to other countries. So... right, some longer questions now. There's an excellent question about textbooks at Key Stage 3. So I'm just going to read exactly what is here and I will give my ideas about this, but I'm just going to say there is no correct answer to this question at all. It's just my opinion. Okay, to textbook or not at Key Stage 3, which is a brilliant sentence in itself. I've taken over a new department to have Dynamo and Viva subscriptions, but the existing staff are not keen to follow a scheme closely linked to a textbook. For me, I can see many benefits: time saved, pre-made differentiated assessments, clear vocab lists, training for Key Stage 4, access to listening material, scaffolded and spiraled material, but it seems to be frowned upon by the department as if it is cheating, in inverted commas, and they'd rather create from scratch every half term. Any advice? What are your thoughts on textbook use? Okay, I have worked in schools where we use textbooks and where we literally followed the scheme of work from the textbook pretty closely, and I've worked in schools where they didn't have, well, a school, one school in particular, I'm trying to think, I think just one school, where we didn't have a textbook at all and we did everything from scratch. I've got to say, personally, I think somewhere in the middle. I actually think textbooks are not the awful things that lots of people seem to think they are. I think following a scheme like linked to a textbook is a really good idea. And like, this person who asked this question, these are all anonymous questions, by the way, so many of the benefits that they have put forward, especially the access to listening material, this is such a big problem. Like, how do you get listening material if you don't have a textbook, other than well, I do a few listening resources, but not enough, I would say. Sorry, I've done as many as I can, but it's very difficult to get listening material. So yeah, having the listenings, and the scaffolded and spiraled material. So if people don't understand what that means, from what I understand here, the spiral is the idea of, you know, you teach something and then you teach it and you kind of add a bit to it and then you add a bit more to it. And it's the idea of the retrieval practice and coming back to it and adding a bit more each time. If the original person who sent this question or if somebody else has a completely different understanding of what they mean by spiraled, but I think that's what it means. And they're really very well planned into textbooks. And actually, it's quite interesting for me to reflect on this, because lots of people have asked me for full lessons and schemes of work and all that kind of thing. It's very, very difficult, especially for me on my own, to actually come up with a whole scheme of work. It's almost impossible. And to think about, you know, for example, with grammar points, I don't say adjectival endings, where do you introduce them? And then how do you repeat them? And then how do you add to them? And then how, you know, where's the retrieval practice? And how's all that coming in? And when it's already there in a textbook, at least, you know, if you're basically covering everything in the textbook, you are covering all the things that they need. And it's at a, you know, hopefully a fairly good level for the students. It goes at a decent pace. You can change the pace of how quickly you go through a textbook. You know, some schools might just do one unit per term. And a term being like, you know, fully from September to December, or one per half term. So that's, you know, 6-7 week period there. I did watch a really good webinar recently with the languages Ofsted, you know, HMI. Can't remember what her title is, but anyway. And she said, so this is, you know, basically coming from Ofsted, less is more in terms of content. So covering the content, but going into depth. So not just skimming over loads and loads and loads of content, but actually going into depth. So that has an impact on the pace, anyway, of how quickly you go through the textbooks. But yeah, I would say, I mean, I have heard, a friend of mine worked at a school where she started in September and they said, oh yes, year 8 finished on page 34 in July, so we're starting on page 35 in September of year 9. And that was literally the scheme of work. Do not do that. But use, I don't think there's, and if you've got the subscriptions and if you've got the textbooks, you know, for a lot of people it's a financial thing. They can't afford the textbooks and they can't afford the subscriptions. And that's a different issue. If you've already got the subscriptions and got the textbooks, use them for the bones of what you're doing. You know, use them for, so I always talk about exploiting one text. So pick a text from a double page spread, either the listening or the reading, and plan your lessons around that and bulk it out. And you probably will need more scaffolding and you probably will need, you know, you need to throw some games in there and some other activities and things like that. And you can make it more creative. There are lots of different ways of doing these things. But I personally don't think there's anything wrong with using the textbook as the bones or the springboard for then, you know, creating a really, really good scheme of work. So there you go, that's my thoughts on those. I would love to know other people's thoughts on that. I know some people who I've chatted to either on the podcast or just, you know, chatted to over the past few years have got quite differing views on these things. So yeah, let me know what you think about that. Okay. This is a really specific question about teaching grammar, which I really love this question. I don't get many questions like this, which is why I wanted to answer this one. I also need to just reassure this teacher that this is really normal. And if anyone else has any answers to this question, again, as I always keep saying, let me know. Okay, the question is, how do you teach the perfect tense in German so that the kids aren't forgetting the three parts? I've really struggled with this and I'm still trying and working on it. Puzzle pieces, reordering sentences, translations, games, gap fills, but it doesn't seem to stick. So in my experience of this, I've got no idea. This is the thing. I'm answering a question and basically saying, I don't know. I have tried so many things myself, in German and in French, teaching the perfect tense with, you know, you've got your subject, you've got your auxiliary verb, and you've got your past participle. And I don't know why it doesn't stick. I don't know why they find it so hard. So one thing I did in a previous school was when we did translations, we literally did them word for word. So they didn't sound like proper English at all. They were just like, if in German it'd be like, ich habe Fußball gespielt. And then they would translate, I have football played. And then we would flip it around the other way. So we would say, right, to write these sentences, this is the English. So you'd write like, I have with my friends football played. And then they would literally translate word for word, and then they would get the German word order right. And then again, I guess in French you can, you just make it more like it's I have done something rather than I did something. Although the problem there is that it is translated by I did something. I've actually answered this question as a way of asking other people for their advice on this, because it is a really, really difficult one. So yeah, if anybody can help us to answer that question, that would be amazing. Okay, the next question. Again, I feel like this is going to resonate with quite a lot of people. This is a bit more of a, it's quite a difficult one. I'll read it all out and then I will give my thoughts on this to you. Don't know if you're going to want to hear what my actual thoughts are, but we will see. So this person says, I know I'm not the only one out there doing more than their share, which I'm just going to say 100% is true. There are lots, and I get messages from people like this all the time, who are either just on their own in a department or just feel like other people are not pulling their weight or can't pull their weight because they're unqualified teachers or they're supply teachers, or, you know, there are various reasons for it. So no, you're not the only one out there doing more than your fair share. I will just put that straight out there. Okay. I've been the main MFL teacher at my school for 3 years. Previously, we had a teacher who could teach year 7 MFL. She's actually put the language, but I'm trying to make this a little bit more anonymous. So I'm just saying MFL, okay? Doesn't really matter what language it is. So previously we had a teacher who could teach year 7 MFL, but I made all resources. And this year we have another teacher, but she is heavily reliant on me for MFL resources. Of course, I share my resources, but I do everything for MFL, the language that they teach. I make the resources, the curriculum, the plans, the vocab quizzes for all year groups and all resources for them. And I'm just kind of upset / frustrated that I'm getting no credit, no time and no money, frankly, to do this. I know some of it I have to do, making resources, of course, but sharing and making everything myself isn't OK. Previously, I've spoken to my mentor when I was an ECT and they just said that's just the way it is. They tried to get the head of department to help and she didn't. Any advice? I mean, I know I'm probably not the best person to ask, but my first advice is, honestly, that doesn't feel like a very supportive working environment. And there are better working environments out there for you. It feels a little bit toxic, but I don't know all the information, so I can't really make massive judgments on the people you work with. To me, it doesn't feel like a positive place to work, though. So I would be seriously considering moving on from there. The issue here, I feel, is that you are doing the work of a head of language, you know, of a language, the language that you teach, but you're not getting, I mean, if you're not getting any money to do it, I'm assuming that you don't have a TLR, you don't get any time. You know, if there was a way of maybe going to your line manager, so going, this is awful as well, but going above the head of department, which is not a nice thing, but if she's not willing to help you, then perhaps sometimes you have to go to SLT, or to go to the head of department first and just make your case for you getting a TLR to be head of the language, okay? Which means that you will get a bit of extra money and you will get some time to do these things. Because if you're doing everything for the language, the problem is you need to do everything because you need to teach your own classes. So it's not like you can stop doing it. I've been in situations where they've tried to spread the workload across the department. And then I end up doing everything anyway, because I don't know if people have noticed, but I'm quite good at making resources. I feel like, you know, that's kind of my thing. People seem to think I'm quite good at making resources. So I would take other people's resources and be like, oh, I don't like these. Either they don't look right, or the answers weren't there, or they just didn't quite make sense. The questions didn't quite make sense. This is in the school where we didn't have a textbook, just to go back to the textbook thing. So I would just end up doing them myself anyway. I was kind of in a similar situation to this, but I was head of German, where I felt like I was doing all the work and not getting as much credit for it as I perhaps could have done. And even because we were in a multi-academy trust, like even taking the work that I was creating and giving it to other schools in the trust. And I don't feel that I was the one that got the credit for that, that I'd been creating all these resources and that I'd been making workbooks and booklets and all that kind of thing for my German classes. And they'd been given to other schools in the trust. And I'm not 100% sure that there was the credit given. So I totally, totally get where you're coming from with this. I mean, you know, my solution was to just walk out the door one day and never go back. As I mentioned in my episode about my biggest failures, that's not something I would recommend, and not something everybody can do. But it, you know, you're going to get burnt out doing this, and you're feeling resentful, and you can't get up and go to work and give it everything that you need to give it when you're a teacher, which is an awful lot, if you are feeling fed up and resentful and frustrated. So either be really, really brave, put together a really good proposal to your head of department and potentially SLT to say, look, I want to be the head of this language. I feel like I deserve a TLR, and I feel like I deserve a couple, you know, an extra 3 or 2 a week if I'm going to be doing all this. Or get on the TES website and start looking for other jobs somewhere else. Potentially a head of a language or a second in department job, because I feel like you're at that point where perhaps you're ready to make that move. And if you can't get that support in your current school, then yeah, why not? See if you can find a second in department job somewhere. So yeah, I don't know if that was what you wanted to hear, but hopefully that's been quite useful. Okay. I've got one more. And again, this is quite a personal question, and also more to do with, I feel like I'm sort of trying to do a bit of coaching and mentoring through these questions today, as well as trying to tell you that I don't know how to teach perfect tense. Okay, so the last question I'm going to answer for this episode is, my German is good. I teach GCSE and could do A level. And my French is Key Stage 3. I'm not perfect, especially German grammar. I'm nervous that if I go elsewhere, they may see I am not faultless. Of course, I check and double check my work and tell the kids I'm not fluent or native. I'm working on the former, but any advice? So my main piece of advice for this is, however good you are, you're better than the kids most of the time, unless you've got that awful situation where you have native speakers and then you just feel so nervous all the time that they're going to know that you're making mistakes. But the kids don't know if you're making mistakes. It sounds like you are really, really, really diligent, and you're checking your work and double checking your work. I mean, I've got to say, like, I have worked with a lot of people, and I've done it myself, where, you know, I will see worksheets that have mistakes in them. I mentored an NQT back in the day when they were still called NQTs, and I did lesson observation, and I noticed that he'd spelt something wrong in the title of the lesson, and I mentioned it to him, and he took that as I was basically bullying him. I'm not going to go into that one, because it was like a whole situation that was actually really quite awful, but yeah, he took it as me bullying him. So, and he wasn't interested in changing the title of the lesson to spell it right. So if you are checking and double checking your work, then already, you know, you're well ahead of that type of person. Sorry, that it sounds like I was being really nasty about that guy. It was a situation. I've never talked about it on the podcast. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. But just be aware that I wasn't bullying him, and it was a really quite nasty situation. Anyway, to go back to this question, I honestly don't think that any school that is a decent school or any school that's going to employ you, is not going to be too bothered that your language isn't absolutely fluent or native standard. Like, if they want a native speaker, they'll employ a native speaker. And in my experience, and I've worked with some wonderful native speakers, but they are not always better just because they speak the language fluently because they're native speakers. Although I've worked with quite a few who've lived in England for so long that, like, I have had to correct their grammar. So, you know, even the native speakers don't speak perfect language. So, yeah, I really think that if you have the confidence that you are a good teacher and that you understand the pedagogy and the psychology of learning and all that kind of thing, and you understand how to put together a good scheme of work if you want to be a head of department, or, you know, if you understand how to help students to progress in a foreign language, the fact that you don't feel that you're not fluent or that you're not a native speaker is less of an issue. And I say this from somebody who, I know I've just said I'm not tutoring anymore, but I have been doing private tuition with languages teachers. I'm just trying to work this out in my head now. So my son is nearly five. By the way, my son is nearly five. I know every time I mention my son's age on the podcast, I'm like, how is he getting so old so quickly? And also, five is still tiny. I was doing that when I was pregnant with him. So like 5.5 years, I've been working with MFL teachers. And there's a lot of them out there who speak one language really, really well. So as this person has said, they can teach German to GCSE or even A-level and teach French at Key Stage 3. Like, just having two languages, even at those levels, is absolutely fantastic. And German grammar's hard. Anyway, just to add that in. So, yeah. So I think have confidence in yourself that your languages are more than good enough to teach. I'm sure you're an excellent teacher. And as I say, you're always going to be that one step better than the kids. You know, even if you're only teaching Key Stage 3, you're still going to be better than the kids. And even though I'm not offering lessons anymore, there are still people out there who can help you. There are lots of SKEs, subject knowledge enhancement, I think they're called. I don't know what SKE stands for. Yeah, there's lots of that kind of thing. There's, you know, there are lots of people out there who will help you if you really do want to feel a bit more confident with your language. So hopefully that's been helpful. I am going to wrap up here. So I've answered all the questions that I was planning to answer. I do have some more, which I will answer next season. And one last thing is the podcast is going fortnightly. So I won't be back next week. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time. And episode 2 is a brilliant interview that I recorded with Dylan and Hayden, who are Teach, Sleep, Repeat. If you've not listened to their podcast, they're primary school teachers and they have a brilliant podcast all about teaching in general. And we had such a good conversation about teaching languages in primary schools. I've already recorded that. As I say, it's not weekly. I've decided to go fortnightly just to spread it all out a little bit more. And yes, I'll be back in 2 weeks with that. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kate Languages podcast. If you did, please think about leaving me a 5-star review. And you can also tag me on social media to let me know you've been listening and let me know your thoughts on the episode. Also, don't forget to subscribe so the next episode of the Kate Languages podcast can be delivered straight to your device as soon as it's released. But until then, auf Wiedersehen, au revoir, adios, bye.